This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily via the internet address www.parstoday.com/en. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Intelsat 902, and Eutelsat satellite, as well as via internet. You can also listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for more details.
And now we enlighten you with Ayah 260 to 263 of Surah Baqarah, recited by Shahriyar Parhizgar.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. وَإِذْ قَالَ إِبْرَاهِيمُ رَبِّ أَرِنِي كَيْفَ تُحْيِي الْمَوْتَى قَالَ أَوَلَمْ تُؤْمِنْ قَالَ بَلَى وَلَكِنْ لِيَطْمَئِنَّ قَلْبِي قال فخذ أربعة من الطير فصرهن إليك ثم اجعل على كل جبل منهن جزءا ثم ادعهن يأتينك سعيا واعلم أن الله عزيز حكيم مثل الذين ينفقون أموالهم في سبيل الله كمثل حبة أنبتت سبع سنابل في كل سنبلة 100 حبة والله يضاعف لمن يشاء والله واسع عليم الذين ينفقون أموالهم في سبيل الله ثم لا يتبعون ما أنفقوا منا ولا أذى لهم أجرهم عند ربهم ولا خوف عليهم ولا هم يحزنون قول معروف ومغفرة خير من صدقة يتبعها أذى والله غني حليم.
In the name of Allah, and when Abraham said, My Lord, show me how you revive the dead. He said, Do you not believe? He said, Yes, indeed, but in order that my heart may be at rest. He said, Take 4 of the birds, then cut them into pieces, and place a part of them on every mountain. Then call them, they will come to you, hastening, and know that Allah is Almighty and All-Wise. Those who spend their wealth in the way of Allah and then do not follow what they have spent with reproaches and affronts, they shall have their reward near their Lord, and they will have no fear, nor will they grieve. An honorable word with pardon is better than a charity followed by affront, and Allah is all-sufficient, most forbearing.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily for listeners across the globe. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard by the internet, FM, and satellites. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAT5, and Intelsat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is iranradio.ir. And now you can listen to Arabi English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English programme, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about our audio quality and other means. Thank you.
Now from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
Welcome, everyone. Now, worldwide protests in support of the Palestinian people and in condemnation of Israel's barbaric genocidal onslaught on the Gaza Strip continue. Despite many governments raising the ante for participation in said protests, from harassment to abuse, arrests, incarceration, and even deportation, people continue risking quite a bit to express their opposition to the collective punishment of Gaza's civilian population and to the weaponizing of food, water, fuel, and medicine by the Israeli occupation army. Demonstrators are outraged that their governments are not doing anything to stop this illegal and shameful display of barbarism by Tel Aviv. Instead, they are shocked that they themselves are now the ones ostracized for speaking out. These ongoing global protests to stop the Gaza genocide and end military and financial support for the Israeli war machine and the crackdown that one must endure to participate will be the focus of today's Spotlight program. And now for our guests. Joining us, Mr. John Stepling, author out of Inderøy, Norway. And Mr. Firas Al-Najim, human rights activist, joining us from Ottawa, Canada. Gentlemen, I'd like to welcome you both to the program. I guess we'll start there in Norway with you, Mr. John Stepling. Pleasure to check in with you, John. Your initial thoughts on how many protests we see day in and day out, John, from people protesting the genocide itself in Gaza to the military and financial support received by the regime to academic ties with Israeli institutions, the BDS movement, from transporting goods to occupied Palestine. We see action at ports to stop any kind of ship from going, heading for occupied Palestine. And we see news outlets being protested because of the biased coverage. John, I mean, you named the protests against Israel, and it's basically culminating somewhere someday on, I mean, almost every other day on the planet. Your initial thoughts?
Well, absolutely, because Israel has committed every possible crime, war crime, every violation of international law that exists, and they've done it multiple times. And then they've bragged about it, and then they have boasted about it. And it's not just the fact that they bomb hospitals. I mean, the horrific fact of bombing hospitals, blowing up and incinerating children and the sick, the elderly. It is the manner in which the IDF does it. It is the manner in which the political class in Tel Aviv expresses their admiration for it. The rabbi who boasted that the gang rapists at the infamous prison in Israel were heroes for gang raping Palestinians to death. One of those soldiers who was a gang rapist became a media celebrity in Israel. It is this unprecedented degree of depravity that cuts across the entire culture. And then you, on a daily basis, people must listen to religious figures, political figures, ordinary citizens in Israel, explaining to you why they are better than you. We are God's chosen people. God chose us. We are better than you. It beggars belief in a certain sense that anybody can be this tone deaf and exhibit this kind of hubris and arrogance, but it happens again and again and again. and then on top of even all of that, IDF soldiers make TikTok videos and Instagram videos ridiculing the suffering of Palestinian mothers and fathers grieving over their dead children. Mm. On top of everything else, they make fun of those that they have slaughtered. It is, I've never seen anything like it, and I think the global population is horrified. People, in a sense, don't want to be part of a civilization that in any way condones this. It has to stop. And it's reached a point of magnitude now in which it has to stop, because I think in general people can't find any kind of reconciliation in their heads between what they're seeing and the fact that they are doing nothing. Their government is doing nothing. Everybody is allowing this to happen, and they want that to stop.
Thank you, John. And Firas Al-Najim joining us out of Canada. Thank you for your patience there, Firas, and welcome to the conversation here. Firas, now according to the Taylor and Francis Online, in an article titled Unpacking the Crackdown on Palestine Solidarity Activism in the UK in a post 7 October reality, it reads the article, no single war zone in the world in recent memory has triggered as much sustained outrage and protest as Israel's genocide of Palestinians in Gaza. People have taken to the streets in staggering numbers worldwide, and they continue to voice their outrage day after day in creative and impactful ways. Your initial thoughts, Firas, on this kind of outpouring we're seeing to condemn what Israel is doing to the Palestinians in Gaza today?
Yes. It's very clear that Israel has crossed all lines and all red lines. They are committing crimes that we have not even seen or heard of in the books or in the history, especially with all the sophisticated weapons that the West is pouring out to them and providing to them. And the thing is, we're also witnessing all this because of the social media and with all the phones that are available inside Gaza, where, you know, we can see these crimes right in front of us and all these, oppressed journalists over there that are being killed, on a daily basis. As it seems, as the consciousness of the people is awakening everywhere in the world, and people are starting to unite against this Zionist regime that is actually drowning in the bloodshed that they are spilling in Gaza and Palestine and in different areas, in the occupied lands. Also, even on the borders with Syria, with Lebanon. I mean, they have no borders, like we said. They're crossing all the lines. And as we can see, the Israeli regime really is hiding behind its money and its influence and the politicians that they bought out in the West. This is all it's about. Right now we have... this is right now election season right now in Canada, and as you can see, a lot of people are being challenged, and a lot of these politicians that are campaigning to be the Prime Minister of Canada are being called out about supporting Israel and why they're not calling this a genocide, things like that, and it's happening in all the different debates that they're doing on the media or inside areas where they come, because they're traveling around right now, to different cities, and they're going to try to, gain more voters and more people to support them. But the truth of the matter is that Israel has never been have so many enemies, and this is what Israel's gaining actually right now. Lots of enemies on the ground. We see protests in places that we never thought we'd see protests. In Asia, in Japan, in South Korea, Taiwan. I mean, there's protests happening everywhere you can think about. And in Canada here, there's areas that they've never even had any type of protest in history. Certain cities like Milton, Oakville, there has not been, a lot of active people standing up for anything in general, actually. Now they're coming out and in support of Palestine. And the call for free Palestine is growing. And just to mention one part is that Trump is calling, deport people that support Palestine that are not U.S. citizens. And same thing with here, Pierre Poilievre.
Yes. Let me get to that because we're going to swing to that dimension of this the story right now in the next go with both you guys with our questions here. We're going to get to the crackdown now, criminalizing a dissent. John, why are people getting arrested in front of the British Parliament, in front of BBC in London, at major college campuses across the U.S., detained and even to put up for deportation? To Fidaz's point there. Today, the Trump administration is going after foreign students and with, visa revocations and whatnot. Who knows what tomorrow holds? But it's really this crazy phenomena that they are criminalizing dissent, because today they're doing it to protect Israel, curbing personal constitutional guarantees and liberties and free speech and freedom of assembly or whatnot. But the precedent, John, that it is setting is horrible moving forward.
Well, yeah. I mean, look, this... a lot of us suggested that a wave of censorship was coming in media anyway. This was 5, 6, 7, 8 years ago. But understand, the targeting of dissent right now is really criticism of Israel. You can get, anybody in Britain can get on social media and say, I hate Buddhists and they should be driven into hell because they're so horrible. Nobody would care. But if you say, I hate Zionists, Israel is committing genocide, I'm appalled by this, that will get you arrested. The only thing that constitutes hate speech in the United States at this point that's prosecutable, that gets prosecuted, is criticism of Israel. It's anti-Semitic, it becomes a hate crime. This is all in protection of Israel. And Trump, of course, was owned by the Adelson Empire, the creepy gambling empire of Sheldon Adelson, and now his widow Miriam, and she owns one of the professional basketball teams in the country. She flew Jonathan Pollard back to Israel on her private jet. All the billionaire Zionists are good friends with each other. They keep a very tight circle and they dictate a lot of this policy. And Trump is absolutely influenced by them. They tell him what to do. He doesn't know what to do, so they tell him what to do. And all his appointments have been arch hawk Zionists. And one of the big focuses of his administration so far has been to prop up Zionism and to claim that one should love Israel more than the United States to an American. This is crazy stuff, but it's also a sign of desperation. In some sense, Israel is unraveling. It's not a real country anyway. It never has been. And now it's a wildly despised country. It's a pariah state. It is kept afloat entirely by U.S. largesse, and nobody wants them anywhere. You know, they're boycotted right and left in sporting events. Their goods are being divested. The Houthis continue to block the Red Sea. The U.S. doesn't know what to do about that. The creation of a narrative is ongoing, but the reality is Israel is suffering. They're close to bankrupt. Hundreds of thousands of Israelis have fled out of Ben Gurion Airport back to the U.S. primarily. So things are not good. These acts of crushing dissent, crushing free speech, getting rid of the First Amendment, this is what you do when you're backed into a corner and desperate. Only the desperate would take measures like this, because they are not sustainable.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Thank you, John. If you, you could exactly pick up where John left off, this crushing dissent, crushing free speech to protect Israel. These young, brilliant minds, many of them are, you know, they're graduate students or whatnot, condemning a genocide, a myriad of war crimes against a civilian population locked in with no access to clean water, food, fuel, medicine, all weapons being weaponized against the civilian population, all illegal violations, war crimes against rules of engagement. And then here you are ruining the lives of these young kids for speaking out, revoking their visas, trying to take away their degrees, pulling federal funding from the universities they belong to if they don't go after them and do your dirty work for you. What kind of precedent are we setting here?
Yes, really, it's really, I think, exposing a lot of these Western regimes and their intolerance towards free speech and the right to speak out about the issues that are happening in the world. And this is an important issue, one of the most important issues in the world right now, as we can see that all of the international laws are being breached, human rights violations all over the place, and the war crimes that Israel is committing, especially Netanyahu also being wanted by the ICC and ICJ, shows you clearly that this person is walking freely while he's wanted for war crimes and, you know, countless amounts of war crimes. And unfortunately, we have the same thing happening here in Canada. The Conservative Party and now the leader of it, Pierre Poilievre, that wants to be the Prime Minister of Canada, is trying to, you know, serve the Israeli lobby here. And he's trying to say that if I get into power, I will be deporting people that speak against Israel. Pretty much, he's trying to say that he's trying to put him in a picture or in a bubble that it's a hate crime, and he calls it anti-Semitism.
And Firas, all these protests in a vain, or do you think they'll ultimately make a difference? And they're global, and they're huge in numbers, huge in scale, and a lot of these young kids, and not just kids, people from all walks of life, many of them are sacrificing quite a bit to get their voices heard in support of defenseless Palestinians, except for the resistance they have. They're truly, on a global level, defenseless when it comes to having any kind of judicial protection and you know, diplomatic protection against these war crimes. And these kids, they speak out, or I should correct myself again, people from all walks of life. Is it in vain, or is it to a good end and to a good objective here?
Well, you know, people are hopeful that Palestine is going to be liberated and it's going to be free. And most people are actually content and, you know, they trust that the axis of resistance is going to do that, because we know that axis of resistance is the one that's really implementing international law and punishing the Zionist regime while the rest of the world is, you know, keeping a blind eye, or they're burying the crimes, or they're just letting Israel with pure impunity. So the movement is moving towards a liberation movement, and people are very hopeful, very happy to be involved in this, and it's growing. And, you know, as we can see here, that these governments, a lot of these Western governments, are trying to really, you know, go against the will of the people, and they're trying to install fear in all these activists and all these movements, because they know that Israel is crossing all the lines. They know this. The police know this. The politicians know this. And they know that these activists are also getting tired of just protesting, and they want to do something bigger than protesting, such as arrest these diplomats inside the Israeli diplomats, or these lobbyists, the Israeli lobbyists. People want to do things like that now. You know, people are talking about things like that. People are trying to close the highway. People are trying to close banks that support Israel. You know, there's bigger things that are happening, and the government is scared of this. That's why they're trying to, you know, go towards arresting people and cracking down and riot police and shooting tear gas.
And they put that same question to John. John, these protests, how effective do you see them as being? Are they out to, or do you feel they actually achieve anything from your perspective?
Absolutely. Absolutely, they achieve something. It's probably the weapon that Israel fears the most. They have had a firm grip on the narrative, on the propaganda narrative for 40 years. I was growing up, you only heard, as a boy in Southern California, you only heard one version of the Israel story, plucky little underdogs, a country for people without a country, an empty country, that, you know, all this mythology. People know that's nonsense. People know now that that was a lie. And so I think the general public, after 70-some years, is much better educated about this history. And they've also seen the genocide, as your other guest pointed out. It's been live streamed on social media. Gabor Mate said this is like Auschwitz on TikTok. It's horrifying. And not a day goes by that you have, you know, yet another indelible and soul-numbing image from Gaza or Lebanon or Syria of Israeli crimes. Not to mention, as I say, that the Israeli army, the Israeli politicians themselves say the most horrific things. They hang themselves in their own words. Netanyahu is seen by most of the world as a war criminal. Most of the world would like to see him arrested, don't want him in their country. So, yes, it is having an effect, and if it continues, it will continue to have more and more of an effect, which is why, again, Trump is doubling down on you know, his exaggerated response, this disproportionate response to simple protest. He's turning into a capital crime. Soon, I'm serious, you will see people suggesting the death penalty for criticism of Israel. I wouldn't doubt this. This is how insane it has gotten. But people won't put up for that with that, and they're not putting up with it. And so okay. It has already had an effect, and it's going to continue to have an effect.
And Fidelis, we don't have a lot of time yet, but I really want to get, because pretty much it's kind of a finish to what John was just pointing to there. According to Human Rights Research Center, there's a disturbing pattern of German authorities, just like U.S. authorities we mentioned earlier, violating constitutional rights of free speech and assembly to crack down, Fidelis, on pro-Palestinian rallies. Now, this is the case you very well know in France, the U.K. My question to you, why attack your people to defend this horrible and unjustified campaign unfolding in Gaza by the Israeli regime, Fidelis? Is it due, do you feel, to complicity by these governments in the onslaught? Do you feel like it's the power of the Israeli lobby to push for legislation against of voices of dissent? Or do you think, what could it be? Why would you, as a government, condemn your people for speaking out against an injustice on this level?
You know, the big part is obviously the Israeli lobby and their pressure, and we can see that here in Canada as well. Germany is a little bit more aggressive and furious, you know, looking back at its history, also being a Nazi regime. And now they're attacking also people over there claiming that they're part of Hezbollah and claiming that it's a terrorist organization, things like that. I just heard about an arrest happening in Germany a few days ago. And they continue to use this kind of aggressive manner with the protesters and shooting tear gas at them, arresting them all over the place. Females, males, they don't defer between the people at all. It just shows this intolerance towards free speech and caring about human rights and fighting for human rights and for the Palestinians. Also, they're biased. They don't really care about Palestinian human beings, but then they care about Ukrainian human beings. It just shows how biased they are. And also with this movement of protest, we can see that Imam Khomeini really cared about this. That's why he called for Al-Quds Day. That was the last Friday of Ramadan. This was called out over 40 years back. And this is what Imam Khomeini cared about, this movement, and knew that this movement is going to grow largely, and that Israel is going to continue to commit their crimes. This shows the wisdom of the Islamic Republic of Iran and its establishment and its goals of fighting this Israeli regime and supporting this massive movement in the world to care about the Palestinian cause. This is the insightful personality of Imam Khomeini and the Islamic Republic of Iran and its leadership.
Gentlemen, time has gotten the better of us. I want to thank you both for joining us on the broadcast here. John Stepling there joining us out of Inderøy, Norway, and Firas Al-Najim joining us out of Ottawa, Canada. And this brings us to the conclusion of this segment of your Spotlight program. Thank you for tuning in, and goodbye for now.
I'm a teacher.
I'm a researcher.
I'm a mother.
I'm a lawyer.
And I believe in acting kindly toward you, because you are...
A Muslim lady.
You are very special. There's no one just like you. You are very special. And I'm so glad you're mine.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum to dear listeners of Muslim Lady. More specifically, our salam and gratitude to women listeners of our program. Well, this is Nahid having the honor of being with you on this episode. And here with me, I have the honor of being with my very dear sister, Sister Zainab. Assalamu alaikum.
Alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah.
So glad that we have you here, and we would appreciate if we could have a brief introduction of you as a Muslim lady.
Yes, bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. First of all, thank you so much for having me. Then I am Tafilan Zainab Askari. I hail from Indian Administrative Kashmir, and I've been living in Qom for some 10 years studying Islamic studies, and it's been some past 2.5 years that I've been researching specifically on women topics, and especially what are the Islamic perspectives about women, and I've also been writing about it.
Great.
For quite a time now, yeah.
Thank you, sister. Women are working. Women are having much on their plates. They are being a good mother, a good wife, and a good servant for Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. And in some cases, women are working outside too. But let's start today's discussion by this question that why is not working at home valued? We all have seen the samples of our mothers devoting their whole time, energy, and putting lots of effort into raising us, into taking good care of the household. And at the same time, they were a good wife, but based on the culture, based on the time that they were living in, many of them have not worked outside. But this concept of working at home has not been considered as something that much valuable. Or we used to say, like when somebody asks us, what was your mom's job? We used to say like, my mom is not working. Where is this coming from that working at home is not valued? Why it is not considered as a valuable job?
Because the modern world has confused worth with wages. Right. You're valued only with the wages. It praises what is seen. It celebrates what is sold. But the work of the heart, the unseen labor of love, those emotions are usually left unpaid and unnamed. She actually teaches a language. She heals fevers. She feeds souls, but society says you're just a housewife and you're unemployed.
And the criteria of the responsibility for a woman who is in charge of home and children is much more than a simple job.
Indeed, she's not unemployed. She's a creator of a humanity. She's a creator of humanity. We have to understand this. And Islam pays a huge, attention on raising a child. For example, Islam says raising a child is a jihad.
Right.
Like we have a hadith from Prophet Muhammad, may Allah's peace and blessings be upon him and his purified family, paradise lies beneath the feet of mothers. So motherhood has such a value. Imam Sajjad alayhi salam in Risalat al-Haquq, the treatise of rights, says that the right of your mother upon you is that you know she bore you when none bears. She protected you with all her limbs, gave you her life, and preferred you over herself. I was reading a research recently. It said that, do you know why women after 30, 35 have pain in their legs? They need more calcium. They have pain in their teeth and all. Because when a child was in her womb for the 9 months, and when it was not able to get the necessary calcium or other requirements or nutrients,
right,
it used to take from the, it used to, you know, suck that from the teeth and the bones of the mother.
Oh, exciting. So it's the matter of devotion of soul and body.
Yeah, how can you repay that? How can you repay that? So this is not a part-time labor. This is a divine, a full-time sacrifice. And yet she's not paid.
Yeah, exactly.
Unfortunately.
And it's not considered as a job.
Yes, because her currency is dua, barakat, and the pleasure of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala.
Yeah, so true. Now, talking about what Islam mentions, what perspectives Islam considers into this matter of the women bearing responsibilities at home, let's go for a very short break, then we'll be back, and we're going to discuss Islam's views towards women.
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Muslim Lady.
Welcome back to Muslim Lady. Today, we started this discussion with my very dear sister Zainab about women and their role as a person who is working at home and at the same time is considered to be, let's say, unfortunately jobless, a person who's not working and is unemployed. Now, switching to Islam's more in detailed perspective towards women's responsibility at home, let's see the way our religion introduces the women's responsibility. Can you tell us about the way Islam is defining the women's responsibility and the job that they are being in charge of?
For example, see, Islam honors choice, but also has some guidelines. For example, if a woman chooses to work outside, Islam does not have problem with that, as long as environment is halal, it's safe,
right,
and she's not neglecting some higher responsibilities. But it's also clear that greatest rewards come from raising righteous children, supporting the family. Like, for example, When are men considered to be in jihad, in the struggle?
Right.
When they're in the battlefield, usually, right? But a woman, if she's raising a child or, you know, just taking care of her household, it's a jihad of women, right? If she's not neglecting these responsibilities, she's definitely doing a jihad, a higher struggle. Building a home that reflects Jannah is literally something that's priceless. Lady Fatima salam alayha never sat in some, I would say, some companies to be remembered. It was like, still the world is, you know, world praises her and stands in awe of her.
Right.
So her value was not in the public appearance. Basically, it lies in the eternal influence. I'd say, I would like to quote Imam Khomeini rahmatullahi alayhi, who said, I would like to quote Imam Khomeini rahmatullah alayhi, who says that from the laps of women, great men are born. Take the example of himself.
Yeah, so true.
Do you remember his mother, like, I don't know, working in some external environment and in some multinational
exactly.
company
and the
or
way
some?
His wife was also raising the
exactly.
children.
Exactly, exactly. Because, you know, we also have these guidelines. Imam Ali alayhi salam said, teach your children before others teach them. Their hearts are like empty soil. Whatever you plant will grow. This is so important. So like when a woman knows this and starts that teaching herself before someone else comes up. Because when we get engaged seriously in the outside world, where we are happily taking the low income.
Right.
And that lot of stress. We really neglect this upbringing where about Imam Ali alayhi salam says that someone else will do it. And I would never see in the lap of a mother a nation is born.
Yeah,
if a mother is taking care of her child, I would like to clear myself. I'm not giving some preference of staying home than working outside, but I'm just creating some, differences, how we are blindly happy working outside for lower wages.
Yeah, and we're honoring that.
And how we are not honoring something that is jihad, something that is highly valuable, something that is that has no price, basically. I Marty Soleimani in one of his speeches says, there are some of the jobs in this world we do that cannot be paid
definitely.
By anyone.
And considering the way a mom has the feelings for a child and the way they are the, let's say, most careful people regarding the way even others are looking at their child. So the solution towards this, if I want my my children's future life to be secured and safe, to be in the way that no one will bother them, or they will not bother the society as well. Well, the solution is here. Though, unfortunately, in modern society, we might fall into the trap of calling this the situation of a woman who is unemployed. We have the higher degree of a job here. And what it takes is the deeper thought, right? It takes a deeper thought into the definition of the way a woman is working at home.
Right.
Considering women's great responsibility at home and the way that this modern society sometimes disregards them, let's imagine that we are not going to value women's responsibility anymore, and we are not going to, like, this position, the position of motherhood, is not going to be considered worthy or valuable. What will happen here in this chaotic situation that mothers, the definitions of life, are not going to be considered valuable in the job that they are doing, the responsibility they are bearing? What will happen in this situation?
Be very careful of the situation, because consciously or unconsciously, you are developing a silent grief within her. Silent grief grows in our homes. Like, mothers feel unseen, the housewives feel ashamed, the children feel neglected, because the first nurturer is being told, you're not enough. And society, it raises broken adults, chasing worth in screens, not in the souls. So I would say no one says thank you to her. There are no medals, there's no promotion, there are no salaries, just dishes, diapers, and deadlines. And definitely there's this phrase also, someone saying, you're lucky you don't have to work.
Right.
So this is so unfortunate. The Prophet, peace be upon him, when the Prophet, peace be upon him and his purified family, whenever he would enter his home, he would help with the chores of the home. He did not ask, what did you do all the day? He asked, how can I serve you?
Right.
How can I help you?
And what is sometimes forgotten is that when we look at mothers, since they have this great character of devotion, of caring and kindness, we consider them as not normal human beings, like a woman. She is still a woman with all her feelings, with all her needs and wants, but she's sacrificing everything for the sake of a family. She's shaping a family by paying the price of her youth, her energy, and all the effort that she can put in life.
Yes, I would say we should remember this, that always, always remember this. A woman's heart breaks not from exhaustion. She did all that throughout the day. It does not break from exhaustion. It rather breaks from invisibility.
How can we know their value better and admire and have the appreciation for their job, for their responsibility? Even let's not call it a job.
Yeah, I would say act her one day. Be a mom one day. Yes. I would say, like, for example, if Say to her one day that you stay aside, let me do your chores. I remember like when I was traveling somewhere and my husband did the chores, he told me the moment I was making the breakfast and the drop of oil suddenly stuck my skin and I was burned. I was like, how do you manage to stay here for the whole day? So see, I would say, act her one day, be her one day. And the mothers themselves, I would say to them, do not let world define you by the title, by some title. You don't need that. You literally don't need that. Because angels record every crumb that you pick up in silence. You don't need the world to give you rewards.
Well, that was all the time we had for today's Muslim Lady. Until another episode. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
I know I'm waiting, waiting for something, something to happen to me. This waiting comes with trials and challenges.
A diverse range of programs. Spirituality. Youth. Eastern Tales. Roundtable Discussions. Culture. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
Limelight. Even if the Zionist regime's Gaza plan failed, it will have left behind a 21st century blueprint for ethnic cleansing. The Zionist regime is executing a long-standing Zionist plan to expel Palestinians and realize Greater Israel, silence the press, kill, starve, destroy, seek diplomatic cover. Regarding this issue, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Please stay tuned for the second part. Middle East Eye Roads. The third step of the Zionist regime's ethnic cleansing program dovetails with the second. Here, Israel has sought to destroy as much of Gaza's healthcare system as it can. This has ensured the continued suffering and, in many cases, slow deaths of thousands injured in the bombings. As part of this effort, Israel has systematically attacked and destroyed hospitals. In December 2024, the UN Human Rights Office stated that such attacks had brought Gaza's health system to the brink of total collapse, with catastrophic effect on Palestinians' access to health and medical care. American doctor Mark Perlmutter, who recently served in Gaza, said, "Surgeons work without soap, antibiotics, or X-ray facilities," and noted that patients routinely die due to the lack of supplies. Another American doctor, Samer Attar, who also volunteered in Gaza, described the slow death of a small boy who was missing skin over half of his body after an Israeli bombing. Doctors were unable to save him. Attar said, "We just sat back and helplessly watched him die." The Zionist regime's strategy fulfills a promise made by then War Minister Yoav Gallant at the war's outset, when he announced a complete siege of Gaza, declaring there would be no electricity, no food, no fuel. It is also consistent with Ilan's advice to the Israeli regime war ministry. In a November 2023 op-ed in Yadut Aharonot, Ilan suggested that severe epidemics would bring victory closer to Israel, a view endorsed by senior Israeli regime figures, including Finance Minister Bezalel Smotrich. The first through third steps alone are sufficient to create a hellscape, but the fourth may be the most critical component of the Zionist regime's ethnic cleansing effort. Here, the Zionist regime has sought to make Gaza so uninhabitable that Palestinians have no choice but to flee. It has systematically destroyed homes, schools, universities, shelters, and roads. According to Doctors Without Borders, in January, more than 90% of Gaza's housing units had been completely or partially destroyed. Trump envoy Steve Witkoff, after visiting Gaza in January, said there was almost nothing left. He dismissed reconstruction plans as impossible. Shortly after, Trump referred to Gaza as a demolition site. These comments were not neutral observations, but tacit endorsements of the Zionist regime's plan. The logic goes, since Gaza is now a wasteland, the human response is to relocate its remaining residents. The Zionist regime hopes that the fifth step will serve as the final stage in the complete ethnic cleansing of Gaza. This step centers on aggressive political maneuvering and logistical coordination to advance that goal. In January, Trump proposed the mass expulsion of Palestinians from Gaza, a plan the Israeli regime immediately endorsed. But the so-called Trump proposal did not originate with Trump. It began in Israel as part of its broader Greater Israel vision and long-standing ethnic cleansing strategy. It has also targeted health workers, killing more than 1,000 doctors and nurses and arresting or torturing over 300 others, according to Gaza's government media office. In December, the Israeli regime abducted the director of one of Gaza's last functioning hospitals. Last month, it killed 15 paramedics and buried them in a mass grave with their ambulances. Crucially, the Zionist regime has also worked methodically to block the entry of essential medical supplies. A 2024 CNN investigation found that it prevented the entry of anesthetics and anesthesia machines, oxygen cylinders, ventilators, and water filtration systems, as well as medicines to treat cancer, and maternity kits, crutches, generators, and X-ray machines, among other items. The lack of anesthetics has meant that many Palestinians, including children, have had limbs amputated without anesthesia. The lack of fuel needed to power generators has caused incubators to fail, leading to the death of newborns. Branding it a Trump plan helps shield Israel and lend the plan credibility. Beyond branding, the Zionist regime has set up an agency to facilitate Gaza's depopulation, announced the seizure of territory within the Gaza Strip, and lobbied third countries, including Somalia and South Sudan, to accept Palestinians. Whether the Zionist regime will succeed remains unclear. A complete ethnic cleansing seems unlikely for now.
many Palestinians have rejected the plan, and the Arab League has proposed its own 5-year reconstruction initiative. Still, the short-term outlook is uncertain, to say nothing of the long term. What happens when there is nothing left to destroy? No nation offers refuge and Palestinians refuse to leave? These are open questions. Even if the Zionist regime's plan ultimately fails, and most of the international community hopes it does, it will have left behind something dangerous, a 21st century blueprint for ethnic cleansing.
Thank you.